The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be with you. Your regular host is off today, so this is Andrew Loker presenting the Trumpet Daily radio program for you this morning. It is nice and cold outside. It's been a cold week here in Oklahoma. Actually, throughout the entire United States, it's been quite cold with frigid temperatures and colder in some areas of the country than they normally are. And of course, some areas are used to the cold. But they're talking about snow falling in Florida, which is pretty rare and kind of exciting, I think, for the people that live down there. But there's this powerful storm that's building that's anticipated to really cause a lot of trouble on the East Coast from northern Florida all the way up through Maine. And it's a particularly cold storm, but also it's going to introduce some more ice and snow, creating what they're calling like a winter hurricane for New England. I have a story here from The Washington Post from January 2nd, and it says forecasters are expecting the storm to become a so-called bomb cyclone because its pressure is predicted to fall so fast, which is an indicator of explosive strengthening. The storm could rank as the most intense over the waters east of New England in decades at this time of year. And so here we see continued weather problems causing trouble in the United States, breaking the back really of us, whether it be through fire or flooding, or now we have cold winter storms. We have these once in a decade or once in multiple decades type of storms. And so we are really being battered about. This article from the Washington Post continues. It says the storm's enormous circulation will help draw several lobes of the polar vortex, or the zone of frigid air encircling the North Pole, over the mid-Atlantic and northeastern states by Friday and Saturday. Wicked cold air sourced from Siberia and the North Pole and Greenland will converge on the region. Temperatures are forecast to be 20 to 40 degrees below normal, the coldest of the winter so far. End of quote. And so here we've already struggling through a really cold snap now that's making a lot of headlines in the news with the cold turn of the year and everything else is happening. And yet it's just going to get worse, colder, wetter, an explosive storm that's kind of like a once in a decade type of storm that's anticipated to strike. So I guess I can't complain too much being here in Oklahoma because really the weather's not that bad. It has been really kind of pleasant in many ways. Well, I'm going to take time in this program to discuss the new tax bill that came into effect at January 1st, 2018. And a lot of us have probably thought about the personal impact of this new tax plan, but it could have an impact or affect the income that comes to the Philadelphia Church of God. And I'll explain that to you shortly here. But before I do that, I wanted to address the Trumpet brief from yesterday. Richard Palmer, one of the frequent guest contributors here and also other radio programs, wrote, I think, a really great Trumpet brief yesterday. And he was drawing from an article written by John Schindler about America's hegemony has ended, or the year that it ended. And actually, this is, I guess, 2 days ago now. I'd like to quote to you from this brief. And I will just say in passing, I'm sure most of you are already subscribers to the Trumpet Brief. If you're not, I would strongly encourage you to go to our website, thetrumpet.com. And right at the top of the website, there's a banner ad there where you can sign up for this brief. And it's really a great resource to stay on top of really what's the most important news happening in the world. It comes out. It's free of charge, obviously. And again, it's just a great source. Richard Palmer said this in his January 2nd Trumpet Brief. A new year is a time for political speeches. This year, the most famous came from Kim Jong-un. He used his speech to boast that he could destroy the United States with the touch of a button. Of course, Donald Trump followed up Kim Jong-un's statements with a tweet of his own saying that he had a bigger nuclear button to push. And so we see this war of words, the rhetoric between the two nations that really seem to be inching or even maybe running toward conflict one with another. Mr. Palmer says, most acknowledge that North Korea's nuclear program could soon do serious damage to the United States. What fewer see is the fact that it has already done serious damage. That's a great point to make here, and I'll carry on with quoting him to show you why that's so important. He talks about the sanctions that have been slapped on North Korea, and there's been a lot of talk, as he says, and really that's kind of the core of the problem is all the talk. Mr. Palmer says, by allowing this tiny backward nation to constantly defy it, America is ruining its prestige. This may not sound like a big deal, but a nation's prestige, its reputation for power, determines how other nations treat it. A nation that appears weak will find itself threatened, confronted, and even attacked far more easily than one with a reputation for strength. And that is a great point to make. The North Koreans are doing damage to the United States. It's all part of the curses that are bringing this nation down. There's no question that the United States has overwhelming power, that it has resources at its disposal far in excess of what North Korea has. And yet we talk and threaten and posture and talk, but no action really follows the talk. Now, it's easy to threaten. It's easy to take a strong position. But if you don't really ever follow that up, as Richard Palmer points out, you start to eat away at your prestige. And that simply encourages other nations to take advantage of your weakness or your perceived weakness. In the United States, it is a real weakness. It's a curse. It's lack of will to use what God has given us. Mr. Palmer continues, closely related to a nation's prestige is its credibility. If prestige is a nation's reputation for power, credibility is its reputation for keeping its word. A little further down, he says, weak American credibility means China and Russia doubt that America will defend these nations. Weak prestige means that these nations doubt America can defend them. Both situations make war more likely. North Korea is weakening both U.S. prestige and credibility. The little nation is proving that you can defy the United States and get away with it. It's showing that you can ignore American threats. And that's really the damage that's being done here. We have been able to maintain peace in the world and create peace in the world simply by our prestige and our credibility. That's a thing of the past, though, and that's what's becoming more and more apparent. You need to read his entire trumpet brief because there's really a lot of support there to make that point. Now, I keep mentioning that we're suffering through curses as a nation, and that's something that's covered frequently here on the Trumpet Daily Radio program. And called to mind for me the blessings and cursings chapters of Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. And that's exactly where Richard Palmer went. He went to Leviticus 26, but I thought I'd just quote you a few verses from Deuteronomy 28. And I think it's good for us to meditate upon what these verses say, because really what God is talking about is something so far removed from us. I think in some ways it's easy for us even to push it aside as just really how bad it could get, or how bad it will get, I should say. In Deuteronomy 28 and verse 63, it says, "And it shall come to pass that as the Eternal rejoiced over you to do you good and to multiply you, so that the Eternal will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to nothing, and you shall be plucked from off the land where you go to possess it." Now, if we just think of that one verse, I think all of us like to think of God as a benevolent God, and he is. He is a God that is dominated by love and giving and serving. And it does do God great pleasure to bless us as a nation or as an individual. He loves to see that. But those blessings require obedience. Those blessings require living a certain way of life. And when we don't do that, God cannot bless us. And so God says that he is also going to see to the curses. Curses that come upon us, where God says, as I read, that we'll be plucked off from the land where we go to possess it. Now, this is what I want us to meditate upon. The next verse says, "And the Eternal shall scatter you among all the people from one end of the earth, even unto the other. And there you shall serve other gods, which neither you nor your fathers have known, even wood and stone." And so God here is talking about, as part of this curse, removing us, physically removing us from the comfort of our home or our home nation, and taking us to a different part of the world where we don't have those comforts, a world that's foreign to us. And not only are we removed from the land, listen to how else we would be affected. It says, "Among these nations shall you find no ease, neither shall the sole of your foot have rest, but the Eternal shall give you there a trembling heart and a failing of eyes and sorrow of mind, and your life shall hang in doubt before you, and you shall fear day and night, and shall have none assurance of your life." That's really something to think about, and that's something that if this nation would take time, or the other nations of Israel, if they would take time to think about what's at stake here, the risk of life, never really knowing from day to day whether you're going to live or die, living with a trembling heart, not having any rest, that's just so foreign from what we experience in the Western nations today. And yet God says, that's what's coming because you're not living my way. Now, again, we won't get into a lot of detail there because it's covered pretty much every single program you hear on the Trumpet Daily Radio program. Mr. Palmer concludes his article or his brief by saying God is allowing the world to suffer through this dangerous period of weakness to bring about a time when all the world will look to him. Once this happens, he will give all nations far more prosperity than any nation has today. And with all nations living his way of life, the whole world will be far happier. That's God's ultimate goal, is to bring about obedience, to bring about a prosperity that's generated by living a certain way of life. That is what God is after. And right now, because mankind as a whole, but in particular the end time nations of Israel, because they choose to live contrary to God's way, they are suffering. And we are suffering increasingly. 2017, last year, will really be remembered for a lot of disaster, a lot of social unrest, a lot of crime. We saw natural disaster or unnatural disaster, you might say. We saw these natural disasters of unprecedented scale just come one after another into the nations of Israel. Hurricanes, drought, fire, tornadoes, just heat waves, all kinds of problems. Beyond that, we suffered through and continue to suffer through just horrible, atrocious stories of very ungodly behavior. And it's in all realms of society, whether it be professional realm, entertainment, political, just common everyday life, the cheating and the lies and all of the division. And just like I said, the ungodly behavior, all starting to make the press. We are reaping now what we've sown for years. What was glamorized in media and in fiction, it has come to light now before us. And it's a terrible, terrible, terrible world. Crime seems to be escalating, more and more mass shootings. I wake up almost every day and look at the news expecting to find some type of a story about a mass shooting. When I was preparing for this message, I came across a website. The website is massshootingtracker.org, massshootingtracker.org. And basically, that it's just exactly what the URL suggests. They document every mass shooting in the United States by labeling or giving you the geographic location, the date, and then they give you the grim statistics of the number of people that were killed and the number of people that were wounded. Now, in 2017, there were 428 mass shootings reported. There's only 365 days in a year, so more than one a day on average. Of those incidences, 592 people were killed and more than 2,000 were wounded. Now, if you're not personally touched by one of these events, if something hasn't happened in your local community, it's almost easy to dismiss the news because, well, it's so common. What I found alarming was that 2017 actually statistically was a little bit better than 2016. 2016, there were 477 incidences reported that left more than 600 people dead. There were fewer wounded, though, at 1750. But just think about that, the violence that we're just so accustomed to now. And you hear the survivor stories of, I didn't expect that this could happen here. I think in time, you're not going to hear those statements anymore. I think we're going to start to hear like, well, just given enough time, you knew it was going to happen here. You just know statistically it's going to affect you. And that's just a terrible testimony to society in the Western nations of Israel. Increased violence, weather curses, character just slipping away. And it goes far beyond that. I was driving around the other day and I heard this statistic on the radio, and I think I have this right, but they said one person in the United States dies every 16 minutes as a result of an opiate overdose. Our diets have degenerated. More people are addicted to opiates, suffering through pain or whatever got them on that. And really, you just start to look around, you think the whole body is sick. And the story that I was hearing on the news, they were basically calling for more congressional oversight, more laws to protect people from becoming addicted to opioids. But how are they going to do that with laws? How are we going to stop mass shooting and weather curses and character that's really terrible? Addiction to drugs. It's not a matter of passing more law. I think we all understand that quite well. Stephen Fleury recently mentioned on one of the Trumpet Daily radio programs just the pictures that are now all too common for the New Year's Eve drunken revelry that takes place in Britain in particular, but all over the world. People partying, and it's just become such an awful spectacle. It doesn't seem that anybody's concerned with just the grotesque display of lack of humanity, I might say. Just reckless abandon. Now, I could go on and on, and I don't want to just come across with just negative story after negative story with this program. When we come back, I will talk to you about something that I guess in some ways you could say is negative. Others might view it as more positive. But there is new tax legislation that has passed that has become law now, and it will impact individuals. It's going to impact families, and it will likely even impact the church. So we'll take a break and come back and talk about those issues.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Daily.
Well, welcome back. One of President Donald Trump's accomplishments at the end of 2017 was a heavily promoted and lightly debated, I think I would argue, a lightly debated tax overhaul that is now law. There are a lot of Americans, I think, that have questions about the new tax law, trying to figure out who benefits, how it's going to affect them, what are some of the costs that are associated with this. And it just reminded me of the legislation that's passing, sweeping legislation, like Obamacare or a new tax law that seemingly gets little research or study. There's debate in Congress, but the debate and the research seems so shallow. And really, it's more an argument of partisan politics and not really addressing the issues, at least from my perspective. Now, I know that interest groups, special interest groups have contributed their thoughts to these laws and rules. And it's probably something just like Obamacare, we're going to have to see what happens. Because really the only way to tell with some of these things is just to look at the fruits. I think one of the obvious factors that is plaguing end time Israel, especially here again in the United States, is this sense of entitlement from the public. They expect to be taken care of regardless of their contribution. I know that it's a sweeping generalization, but I don't think anybody would argue that there's this sense of entitlement. The expectation that the government will somehow provide food or housing or affordable health care or jobs. But beyond government, individuals look to private nonprofit corporations and charities. And those private institutions oftentimes look to help those that are less fortunate, those that maybe don't have the same economic background or the same stable home. And so you have these nonprofits and private companies that are out there trying to help. And this new tax bill is actually likely to affect them, those private institutions, in a bad way. Then that includes the church, and I'll explain why in a few moments. But what's, I think, particularly crushing about this new tax bill and the potential impact is that there are people that are truly needy. There are those that can contribute more, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But those that are needy are likely to suffer. Entitlement is like a drug or an addiction that's really hard to break. Once you start to receive something for nothing, it's very difficult to change that course. It's not that it can't be done, but it is difficult. I want to read you a couple quotes here from famous world leaders. This first one is from Margaret Thatcher. And while she's talking about socialism, I think you'll understand that the words she said really apply to today. She said the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. Another quote here that from Abraham Lincoln. He said, you cannot help people permanently by doing for them what they could and should do for themselves. That's really insightful. There are times in people's lives where they do need a special assistance. They need a helping hand to get them through a certain crisis. But there can be damage done in a permanent setting if you're constantly doing for somebody something that really they should be doing for themselves. President Lincoln also said, if this country is ever demoralized, it will come from trying to live without work. Great quote. A prophecy that I think you could say has come true. This nation is demoralized, right? It is discouraged. It is troubled with all of the disasters and things that I've talked about. The character of the nation is demoralized. And he said it will come from trying to live without work. You see, we all have a responsibility to care for ourselves, to care for our families, to give back to society, not take from society. We have a really wonderful book that I'll get to at the very end of this program. It's The 7 Laws of Success. I'm sure most all of our listeners here have heard of that book. It's a fantastic study. And I really encourage all of us to go back and really apply those laws to the areas in our lives where we're struggling. Maybe we are discouraged. Maybe we're trying to pursue education. Maybe we feel like there's some obstacles in front of us that are very difficult to overcome. It's a quick study. It's a very interesting book and very easy to apply principles that will lead to success. You see, God does advocate that we work. The Bible has a lot of references to the dangers of being slothful. I'll read just a few Proverbs to you here. You're probably familiar with most of these. But this is God's perspective. In Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 9, it says, "He also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster." Right? Those that are weak, those that don't care, those that are satisfied with a subpar performance, well, they're brother to them that are great wasters. Another proverb, chapter 21, verse 25, says that the desire of the slothful kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. Now, that, again, is maybe you might just read over that pretty quickly, but think about this nation and think about the destruction of those that are not working when they really could be and should be. Those that are living off welfare when they don't need to be. As it says there, it's really deadly because their hands refuse to labor. Why go to work if you can make more money living off public benefit? That's a real danger. It's a satanic attack against our nations that encourages that kind of behavior. Finally, one other proverb here. Proverbs 20, verse 13 says, "Love not sleep, lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes and you shall be satisfied with bread." Right? Don't be lazy. Get out there and work. Open your eyes. Find a way to contribute. Find a way to support. Make sure you are contributing. That's what God wants. Now, God also tells us that we need to help those that are in need. And that's what this church does in the form of education and occasionally as needed also through a form of benevolence. But what better way to help people than to provide them an education so that they can get themselves out of trouble? That's where we sacrifice. That's where we give, is to provide this education. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, it says, "But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel, worse than an unbeliever." If you're not providing for yourself, if you're not looking out for your family, and you could extend that to your extended physical family, you could extend that to your spiritual family, you could extend that to mankind. If you're not living this give way, if you're not out there working when you're able, then God says, well, you're denying the faith. You're not living like I tell you. And in a way, you're worse than an unbeliever. You're worse than an unbeliever because you've been taught otherwise. This church, this educational institution that the church sponsors in Armstrong College and Imperial Academy teaches to go out and provide for your own and for your family and to give. God commands that we take care of one another. But again, we recognize there are times when extra help is needed, and that's where this work comes in. We provide all of our materials, as you know, without cost. We don't make requests for money. We don't follow up pressuring people to join the work. We don't send them invoices to pay for what they've received. This work, contrary to just about every other nonprofit in the world, this work is sponsored by those that are willing to sacrifice for the benefit of others. We spend millions of dollars to give away this education. We expend considerable energy to express love toward this world. But we do require donations. We do require finances to support this work. As I said, we spend millions of dollars a year to promote this truth. So let me give you a few details about this new tax bill and how they anticipate it's going to affect philanthropy and especially certain sectors of nonprofits. This was from the Washington Post business section. The title is "Charities Fear Tax Bill Could Turn Philanthropy into a Pursuit Only for the Rich." And what this one of the consequences, I think, of this tax bill is it really is driving people away from the giving mentality and really putting them more into a get type of mindset. This article says many U.S. charities are worried that tax overhaul bill signed by President Trump on Friday could spur landmark shift in philanthropy speeding along the decline of middle-class donors and transforming charitable gift-giving into a pursuit largely left to the wealthy. So the concern is here for the middle class, the thousands of donors that we have in this church that donate just smaller amounts. That is what is at risk. Let me explain why here as this article continues. The source of concern is how the tax bill is expected to sharply reduce the number of taxpayers who qualify for the charitable tax deduction, which is a big driver of gifts to nonprofits. One study predicts that donations will fall at least $13 billion, or about 4.5% next year. The decline is expected to be concentrated among gifts from the middle class or the middle of the income scale. The richest Americans will most likely keep their ability to take the tax break. So there's a problem here. The new tax bill is intended to, part of the intention is to simplify tax filings. And so that, to get a little technical, they've increased the standard deduction, nearly doubling it, or actually maybe even more than doubling it. But they've done that so that there will be fewer people that itemize their tax returns. And that's often where mistakes and complications come into play. And so the government is arguing that they're trying to make it easier for people to file taxes. And so by increasing the standard deduction, they're essentially taking away any incentive for a middle class, small amount donation to charity because there's no tax advantage any longer. In the past, if you gave $3,000 or $4,000 to charity or even less, you were able to deduct that. Most Americans were able to deduct that from their taxes. Now that amount of donation, $3,000 or $4,000, really won't have significant enough impact on their tax filings to even go through the bother of itemizing. And so if there's no incentive to lower your tax burden, the fear is that people will just stop giving, right? If they're not getting any benefit from giving to others, then why not just keep it for yourself? Now, they don't expect, as this article points out, everybody to stop giving to charity, but it is something that has concerned many different nonprofits and especially churches that are concerned about the impact this is going to have. A Catholic cardinal said, quote, "It's deeply disturbing." And a quote here from United Way says that there is widespread concern because middle-class donors are the charity's, quote, "bread and butter." That's how the United Way survives. That's how they're able to help. It says the charity's average annual gift is $379, mostly from people who pledge during workplace campaigns to have $5 or $10 a week deducted from their paychecks. And so while that seems insignificant to lose a donor that contributes, say, $380, the problem is the majority of their donor base fall into that category. They do say they have about 30,000 people who give $10,000 a year or more. And so they're not going to fold up. But they are going to take a significant blow, more than likely, to the amount of resources they have to use to help others. Now, really, the United Way and some of these other churches aren't really all that different from the Philadelphia Church of God as far as like the financial model goes. Our average donation is about $650 a year per person. This article says, we don't have any choice but to look to those higher end donors. We have to, this man says, but it's not really what we want to do. And it's not really healthy for the charitable sector of America. No one expects the middle class to stop giving to charity. But as I said, without that incentive there to do it, no doubt it is going to reduce the amount that's given. A little further down, it says I thought this was an interesting statistic. It says a higher percentage of Americans give to charity than vote. I think that's important to think about because really giving to charity is action. Voting is action too, but it's almost like speaking. Charity giving and helping others, that's a real effort to go out there and actively and constructively help somebody. I'm not going to get into a debate about the difference between voting and giving, but I thought that was interesting to see that in America, it's more likely that you'll find somebody that gives to charity than you'll find somebody that votes. The IRS said the average charitable deduction has hovered about $4,400 in the past few years. And so we find that that amount really is kind of borderline whether or not it's going to be worth it for people to give that money and itemize their taxes. The article continues, the number of people who qualify for charitable deduction is projected to plummet next year from about 30% of all tax filers to as low as 5%. That is because the new tax bill nearly doubles the standard deduction and limits the value of other deductions. The biggest change is expected to be among households earning $75,000 to $200,000 a year, a bracket in which more than half of filers itemize their taxes under the old code. So it is going to affect those that support this work, because I would presume most of those that support this work are going to fall into that category or the category below. And because the new tax bill doesn't reward giving to charity, again, it might impact the way they think about it. Now, a few senators, including Senator Lankford from Oklahoma, suggested a what they call a universal deduction for donations to charity. And I really like this idea, but it didn't pass. The idea is that any donation, whether it be $5 or $5 million, is deductible from your income, lowering your tax burden. And that would incentivize, if that's a word, it would provide incentive for people to give. Because no matter how much they gave, it would lower their tax burden. The problem is for the Congress, they can't afford to lower too much the inflow of revenue. And so that concept, that idea was very quickly put down. This article kind of wraps up by talking about a traditional surge of December donations that dwarfs donations received in all other months. And we experienced the same thing in the church. December is by far our biggest month of donations, not only the number of donations we receive, but also the total amount. And that really makes the point for those that are giving for charitable purposes. Typically, they wait till the end of the year and make their donation at that time, right before the deadline. And so there is going to be a lot of question about the impact of this new tax bill. There is a kind of a problem here, too. I meant to make this point earlier. They don't expect, as I said, the upper income classes to slow down on their donations. Those that are, you know, of the highest tax brackets will likely continue to give to charity in large amounts because they give enough to make it a worthwhile endeavor. They are able to deduct those donations from their tax or their taxable income. The problem is in those upper categories of income, donations are typically made to academic institutions or museums, and much less frequently to other charities like the United Way or to churches like the Philadelphia Church of God. And so it is going to, again, have an impact. And just like Obamacare, which we'll talk about shortly, I think we're just going to have to let some time pass to see how things affect the income of this work and other charities. The Philadelphia Church of God is supported by roughly 15,000 different people around the world that we consider active donors, or it means that they donated sometime in the past 12 months. And again, 15,000 different people support this work. That's quite a few. And in other ways, it's just a mere drop in the bucket. What I think is interesting is that the overwhelming majority of the number of those who contribute to this work do not attend church services with us. They support the church financially. They give on average about $650 each per year, but they don't attend services. Co-workers and donors, as we label them, make up about 30% of our total donation income, at least dollar-wise. And again, the surge of those donations come at the end of the year. And we're seeing that this year, and we're hoping and praying that the level of giving continues to increase. We're likely to have our best year of financial donation income ever worldwide, and so that's very encouraging. But again, it's interesting to see how this new tax bill will affect things. I think in a way you could almost argue that it's one of Satan's attacks trying to reduce the income of this work, which would potentially slow down our efforts to really get this message out there. But in other ways, we're really not all that concerned because we have confidence in what the Bible teaches us. If you read Leviticus 27 and verse 30, it says that the tithe is holy unto God. Those donations that God receives in the church, God considers those holy. And I think for those that contribute to the church, they also look upon that money as holy. They recognize the benefit that is there for mankind. And I believe most people that donate to this work are not doing so only for the purpose of writing off their deduction or their donations in their taxes. Perhaps that influences some. But what we do know is God's laws don't change. And we also believe that people recognize the benefit of supporting this work and sharing and spreading our impact around the world. God doesn't change. And so we'll be watching our donation income as we always do, but probably a little bit more closely next year as we see the impact of this new tax law. I think I've explained that enough. But I was going to say that if you do pray for this work of God, that I would encourage you to include in your prayers that the donation income will increase as we move closer to the return of Christ. I think that kind of goes without saying. But really, if you see attacks like this that could have a negative impact on us, we can counter that by praying that God would reverse the trend and actually provide more resources so that we can support this work even further. Well, as you've probably heard in regard to this tax bill, there are some benefits to the average American taxpayer. Again, their standard deduction is going to increase. It should lower the tax burden for some. It's going to make tax filing easier for a lot of people. That's, again, part of the intention. But we'll have to just kind of wait and see what happens. Politicians tend to promote the positive side of the legislation or the bills that they introduce. But oftentimes you just have to kind of wait to see what the impact is going to be. Mr. Fleury has reported, Stephen Fleury has talked on this program about some of the big businesses that responded to the tax break by giving their employees a special bonus. And definitely there will be economic impact in this world for all of this giving and all of the diminished tax returns. There is going to be some benefit, but it is going to come at a loss to others. I thought it might be easy just to talk about just a few of the details here quickly, and then I'll move on. This is a complicated subject. The Motley Fool produces a financial newsletter that they send out, and this is from the December 18th, 2017 issue. And it says 14 ways the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act could change your 2018 taxes. I don't want to cover all these. And again, I think you're probably more familiar with some of them, but it leads to something that I want to talk to you here in just a moment. First, and something I've already mentioned, is the higher standard deduction. Secondly, they talk about no more personal exemption. And so where you gain some ground, I think if you have a family, you're going to lose some ground. They've increased the child tax credit, which is good news, and they've made the excess child tax credit refundable, which, again, is beneficial to families. This probably won't affect most of our listeners, but the medical expense deduction gets larger, so you can reduce your tax liability if you have a lot of medical expense that year. They've allowed the mortgage interest to remain as a deductible item. But the other thing that most of us are talking about is the removal of the individual mandate. That's a fancy way of talking about the tax penalty that was applied to individuals that chose not to have health insurance. The government called it the individual mandate, and it was essentially a tax penalty. A couple other points that the Motley Fool brought out is small business owners are going to get a break, and then there's a higher estate tax exemption. So again, there is definitely some benefit that comes along with this bill for many people. But as was pointed out by Stephen Fleury, nobody's really addressing the spending issue. So whether there's more money available to the consumers to drive the economy, what really needs to happen is a significant cut in government expenditures, some of the entitlements that we've talked about, and many of the other programs. A lot of those need to be reduced, or there is not going to be enough money to satisfy all of those obligations. I want to talk to you a little bit about healthcare in the United States. But as I said before, like Obamacare is another great example of a bill that was passed into law that perhaps was not studied nearly as much as it should be. Again, I use the word perhaps there pretty loosely. It really should have been studied more. And it was forced upon the Congress to pass not too differently than what we have with this new tax bill. And so we have years of experience now with Obamacare, which was promoted as a way to make health care and health insurance more affordable for Americans. There was this desire to make sure everybody had insurance coverage that they could afford, and so that we wouldn't have to worry about people being left in a financial wreck after an accident happened. The intention also was to increase the number of people covered. But really, it turned out to be quite disastrous, I think, as all of us know. I'll quote to you from ehealthinsurance.com. It's a website. It's a public website. It's not a government website. But they report, according to them at least, as honestly as they can, on the average premiums that are paid for health insurance as well as the average deductible. Just to explain that a little bit, a monthly premium is what an individual would pay an insurance company to have coverage. And then, of course, the deductible is how much that consumer has to pay themselves before the insurance starts to pay in. Now, this article that I have before me is a 10-year survey that compares premiums from 10 years ago to last year and the deductibles from 10 years ago to last year. And again, the intention behind Obamacare was to make things more affordable. Now, these policy premiums that I'm going to explain to you, they're non-government subsidized. So this is if you just went out on your own to get insurance and the government was trying to drive down or maintain a low-cost insurance option for the public. But the exact opposite happened. For an individual person in 2008, they averaged $160 a month in premium payments. $160 a month for an individual to have health insurance. The deductible was $2,000. Back in 2008. And so as I explained earlier, if you fell and broke your leg and you had insurance, you were responsible personally for the first $2,000, and then the rest of it would be covered by your insurance. Skip ahead 10 years to 2017, and for that same individual now, their average monthly insurance premium jumped to $393. So from $160 to $393. That's the average monthly premium for one person to be covered. What happened with the deductible? Well, in 2008, as I said before, it was $2,000. Now in 2017, the average health insurance deductible is over $4,300. So not only are you paying nearly $400 a month for insurance, you're also responsible for the first $4,300 worth of cost should you have an accident. Families, I think it's even worse. In 2008, the average family premium per month was $369. The average deductible was $2,700. Moving ahead to 2017, the average family health insurance premium jumped to $1,000, over $1,000 per month for health insurance coverage, and the average deductible increased to $8,352. So $12,000 a month in premium, or $12,000 a year in premiums for a family, and that came at a cost with $8,352 of a deductible. Hardly more affordable, hardly easier for people to deal with accidents. And it's really been disastrous for the insurance industry, for the medical industry, for individuals that are paying these exorbitant amounts of money for insurance coverage. Now, that was for unsubsidized care. And it's really difficult to find out exactly how much subsidy applies to an average person that qualifies for a subsidy because it's a floating chart. But I wanted to know, and I looked online and found an estimate here of how much the Obamacare subsidies cost the U.S. government. Because if you do fall into a category of financial want and you apply for health insurance, the government encouraged that. And for those that couldn't afford things, they would provide a subsidy to help you pay for your insurance. This source says, and I'm sorry, I didn't bring the source with me. I didn't mark it down. But it says, we now have a price tag showing exactly how much those higher premiums will cost the public. The government will spend nearly $10 billion more this year, rising from about $32 billion in 2016 to about $42.5 billion in 2017, a 28% hike. The average monthly subsidy will rise from $291 per month to $367 on December 16th, 2016. Now think about what that's saying there. To make the insurance more affordable for those that can't afford the insurance in the first place, the government last year spent $42.5 billion to subsidize that insurance. And the amount of money that was required to do that had increased 28% from the previous year. For an individual that is getting government-subsidized health insurance, the government is spending about $367 per month to make that possible. Something is wrong here. Who can afford in a family $1,000 a month for insurance coverage and then still have a savings of $8,300 to cover the deductible should something happen? Nobody can afford that. Can the government afford to spend $367 per month to subsidize somebody? This is a plan and a program that has been a terrible, terrible financial boat anchor on the U.S. economy. In 2015, the latest stats I could find, the total spend on healthcare was $3.2 trillion. That was a 6% increase from the previous year. $3.2 trillion was spent on healthcare just in the United States alone. If you compare that to the gross domestic product for the year, the GDP is basically the total value of the entire economy of the country as contributed by individuals and companies. So basically, it's all the economic output of the country. Did you know that 17% of our total economic output was spent on healthcare? That to me is just shocking. It's really difficult to wrap our minds around. And I'm not saying that the new tax overhaul is going to be as detrimental as Obamacare, but we see the same pattern, a very complex legislation getting not enough review and then passed into law, and then we wait to see what the consequences are. Really can be disturbing. Well, we'll take another break here, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what to expect in this coming year, and then we'll get into the seven laws of success.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Well, as we come into the new calendar year, obviously there's going to be a lot of drama set before us. I don't think any of us expect to see a decrease in the amount of crime or natural disaster. I don't think we're expecting character issues in America to get much better. And really, that's a sad commentary. But really, it's going to take a turning to God. And Bible prophecy tells us not to expect that prior to the return of Jesus Christ. So I want to give you a few things to think about as we head into this new year. And these are just some expected costs that I think all of us would not be too surprised to see. From CBS News, from their website, Money Watch, Elizabeth Harper made this statement. She said, so let's run down the list of products and services that are likely to be priced higher in 2018, from luxuries like your favorite tech gadgets to essentials like groceries and medicine. Smartphones is the first category she talks about, and I'll spare you some of the detail. Basically, as she points out, in 2018, to get one of the new latest and greatest cell phones, you're going to have to spend about $1,000, $1,000 for a phone. And that does not include the monthly service fees. She mentioned streaming video services. The prices are expected to increase. Again, that probably doesn't affect very many listeners of this program. She mentions travel. She says, bad news, vacationers. Airfare prices are expected to rise 3 to 5%, and hotel prices are expected to rise about 4% in 2018. The average vacation cost for a family of four runs about $4,580. And I find that really discouraging. Here you have a nation that has a lot of stress and pressure that could probably use a vacation, but what we're finding is nobody can afford it. Who can afford to take a $4,600 vacation? That's just an average vacation. She talks about different destinations. The prices will be even higher. This, I think, is a terrible commentary. The National Park Service has proposed more than doubling entrance fees to certain parks and has already increased the price of its senior pass by 700%. So the national parks are going to cost more to visit. This article talks about Disneyland, Universal Studios, looking back over the last 10 years, have just about doubled their prices. Another category, home construction, remodeling, and repair. Those prices are expected to rise, and mostly due to the natural disasters that have afflicted this country. Another category, groceries, at least some of them. Government Consumer Price Index estimates prices for groceries will rise about 1% to 2%. Poultry prices are expected to increase pretty substantially. And then she gives a few examples like avocados and other things that will get more expensive. I don't have time, but I was going to talk to you about the average American spends more at restaurants than they do than buying groceries. It's a trend that happened about 2015 and has continued since, where more people eat out than or spend money. They spend more money eating out than they spend to eat at home. And that, of course, is also expected to increase. Honestly, kind of maybe a gross statistic a little bit. It says Americans will eat a record amount of meat in 2018. This is a January 2nd, 2018 article. And it says here, to be precise, the average consumer will eat 222 pounds of red meat and poultry this year, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, surpassing a record set in 2004. To me, that's just shocking, and maybe it shouldn't be. But 222 pounds of meat are anticipated to be consumed per person this year. Other expenses that CBS projects will increase, prescription medication, again, won't affect most of our listeners. But she was saying that brand name prescription drugs, those that you see advertised on television all the time, most of those prices will increase about 18% per year going forward, according to their projections. Eating out, as I said, is going to get more expensive. College education, this I thought was interesting. They gave the average annual tuition and fees estimate. If you go to a private college, the cost per year just for tuition and fees is expected to climb to $34,740. Public colleges, the annual cost for tuition and fees is just under $10,000. And to plug Armstrong College, our expected annual tuition fees is about $2,500. So really quite a break to come to college here at Armstrong College. I was going to talk a little bit about minimum wage. In 18 states, minimum wage increased with the change of the calendar year, which will help people out some, but not enough, really. And that also comes with a counterbalance, where small businesses that are trying to maintain payroll budgets, because they're going to have to pay more per individual, will probably hire fewer people. They'll probably have to lay off some staff because they're going to have to pay them more. So what's a person to do? What is the average American supposed to do? Prices are on the rise, and really income doesn't keep up with inflation. So what are we supposed to do? Well, right now, a lot of people are turning to the lottery. I saw an article this morning that said $800 million is up for grab in the two national lottery, Powerball and Mega Million jackpots. $800 million. Now, that money has to come from somewhere. And where it comes from are lottery ticket sales. And again, not trying to generalize, but typically the wealthiest Americans are not the ones that are playing the lottery. Typically, I would presume you're going to find the middle class and maybe the lower class that are looking for some kind of relief, hoping for some kind of financial miracle. They're spending money that they don't have to create these massive jackpots that might benefit one or two people. But it comes at the cost, really, of you could say hundreds of thousands of others. It's an upside down society. So what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to cope with this? Well, God expects us as Christians to live his way. And by doing so, God says he'll bless us. It's interesting that the Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, they're blessings and cursings. God loves to give. God loves to protect. God loves to heal and encourage and educate. And so by living his way, which brings about those blessings, we can expect to be successful as we move closer to the return of Christ. In fact, you could argue that God demands that we do that. So how do we achieve success with all of these factors against us? Well, it's a matter of being educated by God in how to be successful. And as I mentioned before, we have a great little booklet. I don't have very much time left to go through it, which is probably a good thing, because really you need to study that booklet. I would presume most all of our listeners have that booklet. Everybody listening now has access to it. You can go online to thetrumpet.com, go to our literature tab and request a copy, or you can even download a copy and immediately get into that book. I was thinking about this book because I saw a tweet from one of our members that I thought was really pretty effective. And they were essentially commenting on how there's a lot of self-help books out there. There's a lot of money spent on seminars and different ways that people try to be successful. And he just said, wow, all of those books, and yet you could have the best book, The 7 Laws of Success, for free. And it got me thinking, really, all of us need to go back through that book. I found an article. This is from 2014. And the title of the article is "The Self-Help Industry Helps Itself to Billions of Dollars." I thought this was a good point. They said self-improvement represents a $10 billion per year industry in the United States alone. It says in addition to high revenues, self-help also has a high recidivism rate, with the most likely purchaser of self-help books being the same person who purchased one already at least 18 months ago. This begs the question of how much good these self-help books and seminars are doing for consumers. Great point. Why is it such a huge industry? Well, people are looking for answers. They want to be successful, but there's no help in those books because they're missing God's perspective. They don't teach God's way of life, at least not as thoroughly as the Bible does. They might touch on a principle or two, but they lack the real keys to being successful. Well, those keys are explained in our booklet, The 7 Laws of Success. I'll just remind you here. I'll just grab a couple subheads out of the text here to remind you what those laws are and to encourage you to read this book. Because as Mr. Armstrong said, the author of this book, you can apply this to your family life. If you want to have a more successful family, you can apply it to your studies, to your family. This isn't just tied into being successful financially. Really, if there's any area in our life where we need to improve, then we can apply these 7 laws and expect some really great results. The first law of the 7 laws of success is to fix the right goal. Herbert Armstrong said, in other words, the very first law of success is to be able to define success. Once you have learned what success is, make that your goal in life. Right? It's digging deeper and getting to a principle, a way of looking at life, not just a temporary goal, but what is our approach? What is real success? Well, the Bible explains that to you, as does this booklet. The second vital law is education. That shouldn't be too much of a surprise. We can't expect to be successful unless we learn how to do that. We should expect to have to learn and study and expend energy to become educated and ready to be successful. The third law, which probably most, hopefully most would accept, would be good health. How can we be successful if we're bogged down in bad health by bad habits of not eating properly or not getting enough rest or failing to exercise? If we want to be successful, as this booklet points out, we really need to monitor and promote health in our life. The fourth law is drive. Mr. Armstrong said he puts a constant prod on himself. He not only drives himself, he drives those under him, else they might lag, let down, or stagnate. Do we have drive? Are we really willing to push hard, to fight through difficulties and be driven to be successful? It doesn't happen overnight. It requires patience. The fifth law is resourcefulness. All of these laws tie together. Resourcefulness really kind of talks about, well, how do you deal with adversity? If you encounter an obstacle, a complication, if something makes your path a little bit encumbered, how do you respond? How do I respond? We have to be resourceful if we're going to be successful. It's not easy. That's the point. We need to make sure we're resourceful in thinking about how to be successful. And the sixth law is perseverance, or as we often talk about it, stick-to-itiveness, right? Are we willing to persevere? Are we willing to patiently keep pushing and pushing to be successful? Are we willing to go back and study and promote our health and further our education to refine our goals? Are we willing to really persevere and stick with it all the way through to the end? That's a characteristic that might be lacking in some. And that brings us to the seventh law of success. As Mr. Armstrong taught us, it really is the first law, but it's the most important law. And that law is close and wonderful contact with God and constant, continuous guidance from God. It's not just a quick prayer. It's a daily way of life, including God in our plans, having God direct and bless us. Again, you can read Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, the Proverbs. You can go through our literature. You get God's perspective on what he expects out of us in life. If we can apply those principles, if we can really put all of these laws into practice and keep God as our primary partner, we can guarantee success. God wants to bless us and promote us and help us to really stand out in a positive way. And so as we wrap up this program, I do so with the encouragement that you get out there and really dig into that book, The Seven Laws of Success. I encourage you to continue to participate in the programming on KPCG. I encourage you to stay close to what the church is teaching, to subscribe to the Trumpet Brief, and make it your goal to keep up daily with what God is doing through this work. Well, it's been great to be with you, and I'm sure we'll eagerly anticipate the return of Stephen Fleury. But until then, have a very productive and enjoyable day.